Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. It's a scenario that no pet owner wants to imagine, their dog or cat being injured. But it does happen, and sometimes first aid needs to be administered right on the spot. And the big question then is, are you ready? Back to give us some advice on how we can help our pets in an emergency and also answer some questions on pet behavior is Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. He's a veterinarian and pet behavior consultant at the Westwood Animal Hospital. And Wayne, always good to have you here.
Always good to be here. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, let's start with what pet owners should have on hand for emergency situations and, you know, a pet first aid kit, as it were. What should be in something like that?
Well, it's one more common types of problem that families will deal with. It would be some minor injuries like abrasions or cuts or things like that.
Yeah.
And so having some bandage material available, roll gauze, gauze pads, tape, antibiotic ointments like triple antibiotics, cleansing solutions like betadine solution or maybe even saline eye wash, which you can buy at a pharmacy to help flush out a wound or flush out an eye if a pet would happen to get some kind of poison or irritant in the eyes. You know, those are all things that you want to have there. And then tweezers, tick removers.
Yeah.
There are all types of things that can be helpful to have on hand.
And just for the record, we have Wayne's list posted on our website at kcur.org, his list of a first aid kit for dogs and cats. And, you know, Wayne, whenever I think about, you know, someone trying to help out a dog or a cat in some distress, it's not the, you know, changing the wound or helping repair the wound that it's so daunting to me as much as it is the dog or cat being so uncomfortable and fighting and resisting any help that might be coming toward it.
Yeah, you want to be as calm as you can. You want to be careful because even the friendliest dog or cat, if they're in pain, if they're frightened, they can cause serious injuries if you're trying to help them out. So be calm, be quiet. If it's a small pet like a cat or a small dog, sometimes you know, if you want to inspect a wound on a paw or treat something or maybe get a insect stinger out of the leg, wrapping it in a towel will help out. So you can take a bath towel and maybe double it up and wrap it around the pet and kind of hold it close, you know, around the neck area, and that'll immobilize most of the body and make things safer. For larger dogs, a muzzle can be real helpful, and that's something else you might consider having in your emergency kit is a muzzle for the pet in case it's a real painful situation, but you've got to address it, but you want to do it safely. You can also make a muzzle. You can take about 3 feet of gauze or a strip of fabric, and that can be used to tie it around the dog's muzzle and make things a lot safer for the family.
I bet they'll love that, won't they?
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, sometimes the best you can do is wrap a towel around the pet and try to carefully scoop it up into the car and get it to the emergency clinic as fast as you can, which this is something else people should consider. And this is other information they might want to keep in their emergency kit. Phone number and location,
yeah,
directions,
idea.
The local emergency hospital. And it's always a good idea to not wait to the last minute, but go out and visit that emergency hospital ahead of time, because it's not uncommon that they might be stuck at the edge of a mall or behind some business buildings or something like that. And there might not be a direct course there. So you want to find out ahead of time so you're not worried about trying to locate it.
You know, this might be too broad of a question. I know every situation is sort of dependent on itself in terms of how you respond to it. But in general, what do you recommend to folks, to pet owners, about situations they can treat themselves versus situations that would require the attention of a professional?
A lot of it, it depends on how dire the situation is, but it also depends on the comfort level of the family. And if the pet is real weak, if it's gums are pale, if it's lost a lot of blood, if it's having multiple seizures, that's something that you want to call the emergency clinic right away and say, I'm on my way, I'm taking the pet over. But the more minor things like abrasions, allergic reactions like hives that the pet might get if it's bitten by a bee or something like that, diarrhea, you know, in a pet that's otherwise healthy, that can be handled at home. And the other thing the family might think about doing is taking a pet first aid course. And
they have them?
Yes, they do. If you can go online here in Kansas City, and depending on the time of the year, you might find courses available at some of the community colleges, even some of the larger pet supply stores that do training and have other community services. You might find a first aid course there also.
What about a situation where you would definitely recommend that the pet owner not try to engage? You just immediately take the pet into a hospital to see a professional.
Well, a situation where the dog's in shock, like it's sort of as I alluded to, where it's very weak. The gums are really pale. If you got broken bones, that's got to be addressed at the hospital. Seizures, those need to be addressed in a hospital situation.
Yeah. Okay, so if a cat or a dog has a scrape or a shallow cut, you do what?
Well,
same stuff you do for your son or daughter, probably.
Pretty much the same, exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, another good reason to have a first aid, this is kind of like the horse for the carriage, I'm not sure, but to have a first aid kit is a lot of things you'll have in a first aid kit for your pet you can use for the family, too. Maybe we should have it for the family first. But I'm sorry.
A shallow scrape or cut, you want to have...
You want to, first of all, make the situation safe. So depending on how painful the pet is and how calm or how excited it is, you want to make it safe. Use your muzzle, use your towel or a blanket to kind of immobilize the pet. Then you want to clean it out. And you want to use something like saline. You can buy these large bottles of saline eyewash solutions at a pharmacy. That can be used to clean out the wound. You don't want to put alcohol on there besides the fact that it's not very good for the tissues. The pet's not going to like that one bit.
Yeah.
If it's a wound that's infected, it needs to be addressed right away. You can't get the pet to the veterinary hospital right away, but it's obviously infected. It's an older wound, maybe on a cat that comes back. You can buy betadine solution, which is an iodine solution that you can purchase in a pharmacy, and that's a little bit stronger disinfectant, but still mild enough that you can apply it to a wound without the pet resisting. And then once it's cleaned, a light coat of a antibiotic ointment on a little bit of a gauze pad, and then a little bit of bandage material to hold that in place. If you're going to put a bandage on, you want to make sure that you don't put it on too tight.
Mm-hmm.
And after it's applied, you'll want to watch the toes, the extremities, and make sure that there's no swelling or edema to suggest that you might need to loosen that up.
We're visiting with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen about first aid for your pets, and Matt sent us this email to uptodate@kcur.org. Earlier this year, the American Red Cross, Matt writes, launched a pet first aid app, one of several launched in the past 2 years focused on safety in times of disaster. It's also the only app that has a fee, he writes. That's the American Red Cross pet first aid app. Are you familiar with it?
I haven't used it. I know that they have an app out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, something more serious of a situation, Dr. Hunhausen, a cut or wound with profuse bleeding. What should I have in my first aid kit, and how do I use it in a situation like that?
Well, you should have some absorbent gauze pads. You can buy these at the pharmacy also. Typically, they're gauze pads that are about maybe 2 by 3 inches on a side. And so if you notice that the lower part of the leg's got a cut and then you've got this pulsing red blood coming out of there, then it's a good chance that the pet has nicked an artery. And so take 5 or 6 layers and apply it gently but firmly to that area. And you would want to apply, if it's a mild to moderate bleed, you'd want to apply the gauze and the pressure and try to keep pressure on there for at least 5 minutes. You don't want to inspect it too often. If you're every 30 seconds or so, you're pulling the gauze back to see if it's bleeding, you kind of pull the clot off and inhibit the bleeding. So you apply that. If it's a larger bleed,
leave it alone.
Then
yeah.
You may need to apply the gauze pad, absorbent gauze pads, wrap some gauze wrap around that, some bandage material to hold it in place, and then you're going to need to get off to the veterinary hospital.
If our listeners have questions for Dr. Hunhausen about this or their pet behavior questions, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. And I love our listeners. Gabby asked this, Wayne. Our male fixed cat spends a lot of time outside this time of year. One of his favorite things to do is catch bugs, especially cicadas. This often results in him getting a fat, swollen lip, either from being stung or whatever else. This swelling usually goes away after a few days. Is there any danger to this injury? And is there anything I should be doing to treat his fat lip? Is this a common injury for cats?
Well, yeah, it's not real common.
It
not
is.
Real common. We see it sounds like it might be more of an allergic reaction maybe if the pet was bitten by an insect that is chewing on.
Yeah, yeah.
It depends on how cooperative the cat is. And mm-hmm. if the cat's really cooperative, you can apply a cool compress, maybe wrap some gauze around some ice and hold that on there to bring that down. Now, the biggest concern about insect bites and allergic reactions is sometimes you can have an anaphylactic reaction, in which that's a shock reaction, mm-hmm. just like a person is allergic to penicillin or to bees or things like that. And in that case, what you'll see would be panting, some difficulty breathing, the gums would become pale. If that's going on, the pet's going into shock. And so what you want to do is wrap it up, keep it warm, if it's semi-comatose, it's really becoming very, very weak, and on the way in, you might want to elevate the rear end, keeping a little bit more blood going to the head. But that's a shock situation needs to be addressed right away.
You know, this morning you've mentioned the color of a pet's gums a couple of times as mm-hmm. being a key indicator. I've never thought about the color of gums being meaningful. Why is that?
Well, there are a number of things you can learn by looking at the gums, and it's a crude estimate of blood pressure. As the blood pressure goes down, if you have internal bleeding or external bleeding, the red color will dissipate, and the gums will get more pale. If the pet has a problem, like maybe it's carbon monoxide poisoning, or if it has a heart disease or a respiratory problem, then you might see the gums take on more of a bluish tint. So if we have a dog that has a serious heart murmur, it started going into congestive heart failure, you take it for a long walk, you might see some difficulty breathing, maybe a little moist coughing. And if you look at its gums and they're sort of a muddy color or a bluish color, then you've got some type of cardiopulmonary problem, and that's something that you need to visit your veterinarian about. The other thing that you can get an idea on in regard to blood pressure is actually the capillary refill time. And capillaries are the small blood vessels that are right under the skin or the mucous membranes. And typically, if you push on the gums of a healthy dog or cat, they'll blanch out to white when you take your finger off. And within about a second, the pink color comes back again. And so if you have a dog that maybe has been hit by a car and it seems like it's doing pretty well, maybe a little tired or lethargic, you can check the gums out and you can check the capillary refill time. And you find that as the minutes or hours go by, that it's taking longer and longer for that pink to come back, then you would suspect maybe some internal bleeding because the blood pressure is dropping, and that would be a sign that, well, maybe the pet's not as well. We need to go to the veterinarian.
Kim wants to know this, Wayne. My small dog has chigger bites in the inside of his legs where there is very little hair. So did your host a few weeks ago from his visit to the Flint Hills, by the way. But can we use human medicine for these chigger bites?
You sure can. Now, chiggers aren't real common in dogs, so a staph infection actually is more likely to cause something to look like chiggers. So that might be a concern. If it is just chiggers or some kind of rash that's not an infected area of skin, you could use a wet compress using a baking soda. That's real soothing. There's a product that you can buy from a pharmacy called Domburl Solution. Oftentimes it comes as a tablet or powder. You mix it with water, and that's real soothing, and it'll stop the itch in the areas because dogs often dig into those areas. And you can also give Benadryl, and just over-the-counter Benadryl, and that's a nice, safe compound for dogs and cats.
How do you know how much Benadryl to administer
there? The best thing, and there are a number of medications that I recommended on that list that you have posted on your website.
Yeah.
The best thing to do is look at that list, and as you're putting things together, talk to your veterinarian. And every pet might be a little bit different. There might be some health issues that might change the dosages. And so the best thing to do is know that you need to have some Benadryl in your first aid kit, but talk to your veterinarian ahead of time. Your veterinarian can make recommendations on the proper dose for that individual.
Let's go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. We're talking about first aid for your dog or cat. We're also talking about taking your pet behavior questions. I think Bev from Kansas City North has one for us right now. Bev, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
My problem is I just got a new puppy, and it's a little male, and he's 8 weeks old. I have an older dog that is a small dog, and it's a female, and she's about 8 years old, does not like the puppy at all.
Ha.
Don't know what to do. You know, she's starting to warm up a little bit, but she still is very, very cranky with it. I mean, to the point where I'm afraid I can't leave them alone at all.
What breed breeds are the two dogs?
Well, Chihuahua. They're both Chihuahuas.
Okay.
One's a mixed, little mixture, but what the other one is a total Chihuahua.
And in what situations are you having problems? Is it only a situation if the puppy tries to play with the older dog, or does the older dog go out of its way?
Not necessarily. When it walks, when my little one walks by, well, I guess you could say he probably is intending on playing. When he walks by, she has a deep growl, deep-throated growl, like, stay away from me. And a couple of times she's kind of attacking, you know, not, she hasn't bit him or anything, but it's pretty, it scares him to death and it frightens me.
Okay. Well, you may need some professional help on a situation like this involving aggression between two dogs. Certainly, the first thing you want to do is make things safe, which you're aware of. You might want to keep a leash on the older dog so you have a little more control over it while you're supervising. And a simple thing that you might try, you know, assuming that this dog is not going out and really attacking and causing damage at this point, would be to keep some really, really special treats, some meaty treats. That the older dog really, really likes, the small pieces about the size of a peanut since it's a Chihuahua. And every time the older dog looks at the puppy, say its name, call it over, and give it a treat, the older dog. And so So what you're doing is by saying the dog's name, and say it really up in a really friendly, upbeat tone, the dog should look at you. So then the first thing you want to do is distract it from the puppy, and then you call it over and give it a treat. What you're doing is counter conditioning. You're starting to make positive associations with that puppy. And so that hopefully, you know, as time goes on, the older dog starts going, gosh, it's nice to have this puppy around because whenever I see him or he gets up or moves or comes in the room, I get something real good. But those would be a couple things that I'd start out with. The other problem I have with puppies and older dogs is puppies can be pretty obnoxious. It's all about me. They want to play too hard and bother everybody. So keep that puppy busy and away from the older dog. You can give it really interesting toys. If the older dog doesn't go over and get in a fight over a Kong toy with a little bit of cheese in it, then I use the toys that you can put food in to keep the puppy really distracted. Mm-hmm. That should help out too. And then a lot more exercise for the older dog. The exercise will help keep the dog a little bit more calm and less reactive.
All right. That's a good idea. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
We'll call us back next month, Bev, and let us know how it went. Appreciate it. Let's go to Dawn from Olathe. Dawn, you're up to date with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen of the Westwood Animal Hospital in lovely downtown Westwood, Kansas. Good morning, Dawn.
Oh, good morning. Thanks so much for taking my call. I have two female elderly cats. They're both 16 years old. And I need some suggestions on how to get them to do better with their litter box habits.
Mm.
I've tried changing the litter. I've tried different types of litter, multiple cat boxes. I'm not ready to do what I probably need to do because they are my family. So I was just wondering if you had any suggestions.
Have they been is it urine or stool or both?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, your bladder infections or bladder inflammation issues are common causes of house soiling. That might be something your veterinarian might want to help you out with and check that out. Make sure that there's no reason, medical reason, why the pet would avoid the box because it hurts to urinate. The same way with the stool. If there's any loose stool, chronic inflammatory bowel disease or some other related diseases might cause a cat not to use the box. But the stool's normal and you've got to clean your analysis, then it's a behavioral issue that you have to deal with. And the pet's soiling a lot of different areas around the home?
It's in the basement.
Okay. So only in the basement?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Have you tried closing the door to the basement? Or is that where their litter box is kept?
That's where their litter boxes are.
Okay. And they're going all over the basement downstairs?
Right around the litter boxes, yes.
Uh-huh. Just right around the litter box. So if they get up the box and they don't go in, that suggests that maybe there's something about the litter box or the substrate. What you might want to do is block off that area and maybe try a litter box in the basement that has 90% sand and 10% potting soil, which is a real natural substrate. And that'd be an easy thing to try since it's the basement area where you have the box, and keep your fingers crossed. If they use that, then as the days, or actually the weeks or months go by, I would gradually replace the sand mixture with a clumping odor-free clay litter, and see if that'll work for you.
Fascinating. Do I just mix the sand and soil together?
Right.
Do
just,
I do that or do
no,
I
No, you'll
that?
You'll go to a hardware store and you buy a sack of sand and you buy a small bag of sand, potting soil, about 90% sand, 10% potting soil, and then I'd put maybe just a couple inch and a half, 2 inches in there.
No, I would use that. That sounds pretty good. I just like that whole idea, Dawn. I hope that works for you.
I do too. Thank you so much.
You bet, Dawn.
You're welcome.
Good luck.
Take care.
Get our number here, 816-235-2888 for your questions, pet behavior questions, maybe first aid questions involving your dog or cat, 816-235-2888. Let's go back to the first aid thing just for a moment, Wayne. If I suspect, you mentioned, alluded to this a little while ago, if I suspect a broken bone, say, you know, in the leg of my dog or cat, and I'm out in the field with my hunting dog with no idea where the closest vet is, can I splint it like I would for a human, or is that just asking for lots of trouble?
You can, but if you've got a large hunting dog with a broken leg, that dog's going to be in a lot of pain. It's going to be really reactive, and it can be a real challenge to actually get a splint on it. You know, if you have a calm dog that has a higher pain tolerance, you can put a splint on the leg. Now, splints are a lot more effective for breaks that are below the knee or below the elbow area, because you really, to do a splint right, you really want to immobilize the joint above the break.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a break in the middle of the femur right below the hip, if you don't, the splint can actually move, cause enough leverage in there to actually make that break move around more.
Right. In a situation like that, you're looking at picking up your dog and carrying him back, I imagine.
Yeah, and again, I would have a muzzle on, because when you pick it up, you're going to be close to its face. So ideally, you'd want to put a muzzle on. Certainly, you have to be really, really careful. But you can use on a small dog, you could roll up a magazine and wrap that around the leg, and then wrap gauze or tape around that. You can buy in your emergency kit, your first aid kit, you can have roll cotton. You can buy these big bolts of cotton that are used for actually splints in the veterinary hospital, and you wrap that around the area, and then you wrap gauze around that and to help immobilize it too.
I mean, if this happens on a walk around a neighborhood, or your dog or cat is injured in the neighborhood, would you immobilize the bone, try to at least, before you took the dog or cat into the hospital, or would you just immediately get the dog into the hospital?
I think in most cases the best thing to do is to gently get the pet in the car and go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And it's putting a splint on is a dangerous proposition for most pet owners. If you don't do it right, you could make things worse instead of better.
You know, what about a situation that sometimes folks come across and they hate to do it, but it happens once in a while? You're driving down the street and you come across an injured dog or cat lying in the street. It's been hit by a car and maybe someone hasn't stopped. What's the best way to move it, especially if there's a possibility of internal injuries or broken bones and there's other cars coming up and down the street? What do you do?
You don't want to put yourself in any danger.
Well,
good people, point. their carts sometimes are working better than their mind. You've got to be careful. If it's a high traffic situation, the best thing to do is call the police.
Mm-hmm.
Call the police and then animal control, or they'll call animal control. Get somebody over there to stop the traffic. As far as getting the pet out of a road or an animal out of a road, a blanket would be the best tool to use. And you'd lay the blanket out next to the pet and carefully roll the pet over into the blanket. And then you can grab the four corners or four corners and pick it up and get it out of there.
You want to stay away from the mouth.
You've got to be careful, because if it's a feral animal, I mean, the rabies is not too uncommon in Kansas. And you got to be concerned about that type of thing, too. If you're bitten and the pet or the animal takes off, you know, then you've got to be sure to contact a doctor about possibly rabies treatment.
Okay, just a final point about first aid, and then we'll take a break here, Wayne. If my pet has gotten into something toxic like antifreeze or a poison, can I do anything to counteract it before putting it in the car and racing over to the vet's office?
The best thing to do is right away either call your veterinarian, call the emergency hospital, or you can call ASPCA, has a poison hotline. Really, really excellent resource. That's another phone number that's on that list that you have posted on your website that you should have in your phone. And you can call. Now, there's a fee for that. I think it's somewhere between $35 and $45. But they've got a really great resources. And whatever your pet might have gotten into, if you provide the age and the weight and the breed and how much of whatever compound it was it got into, they can tell you what to do. Huh. And there's some. It's good to call a professional first, because there are some things, like the pet gets into chocolate or something that's not real corrosive. Oftentimes, the best thing to do is have it to vomit right away.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use hydrogen peroxide to do that.
And you just have it drink some porcelain down the mouth, and
yes,
out
you
it comes.
Can.
Then, eh?
Yeah, about
to get out of the way. Yeah.
Yeah, you want to use about a teaspoon per 5 pounds of body weight. And it's a relatively safe compound. On a dog, you just kind of pull the lips out, the corner of the lip out, and pour it in that little pocket a little bit at a time. And so you give it about a teaspoon for 5 pounds of body weight. You wait 10 or 15 minutes. If there's no vomiting, you can give that amount again. So that would be like 4 tablespoons for a 60-pound dog. But there are some things you don't want the pet to vomit. You know, mm-hmm. if it's a real corrosive alkali agent, that can cause inflammation going down. And if it comes back up again, it can bring the esophagus again. And then you can get strictures and some really serious problems. So the best thing to do is contact somebody right away. Ouch. And then they can say, yeah, get the pet to vomit or get it in or whatever. Antifreeze would be something else that you could have the pet vomit. Or grapes. Grapes are toxic for dogs. And
grapes are.
Yes, and they can cause kidney failure. The mechanism's not completely understood, but grapes and raisins can be very toxic. And I've known pets that have eaten grapes and raisins all their life and not had any problems, or maybe some idiosyncratic issues with individual dogs. But there's certainly a danger in the kitchen.
Well, again, Dr. Wayne Hunhausen's recommendation for your first aid kit for your dog and cat, that's available on our website, kcur.org. Just go to the up-to-date page. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get phone calls from Sharon, Jerry, and Dennis. We'll take more phone calls at 816-235-2888. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, visiting with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. He's a veterinarian and pet behavior consultant. He's with the Westwood Animal Hospital in Westwood, Kansas. We're taking your questions now, your behavior questions about your dog or cat, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Sharon from Kansas City, Missouri. Sharon, good morning.
Good morning. I have a situation with a border collie/terrier mix. There are two dogs in the home, a poodle mix with something, but the border collie, they've lived together constantly for about 8 years, and they get along fine. But now, all of a sudden, the border collie is, he acts like he's afraid of the food bowl, and he'll kind of creep up to it and take a few bites and then back away. And he's become very nervous in general anyway, but this thing with the food, he'll do that, approach the bowl, and then he finally winds up slinging the bowl around, and then of course the food goes all over. So I don't know, you know, what to do about
it. I've never heard of something like this before, Wayne.
Well, he slings, so he's really cautious and doesn't want to approach it. Does he finally just like lunge at and attack the bowl and throw it around?
I think the reason that the bowl starts flying is because he catches the rim with his teeth and pulls it a little bit. And
okay.
Then once it starts going, he's just kind of into it.
Okay. All right. Does he have, you think he, would you suspect any dental problems? Does he have a hard time chewing biscuits? Does he slobber? Does he whine when he chews hard food?
No, none of those that are obvious.
Yeah, so we have, the first thing we have to think about or try to find out, and we may not know the answers, why is a dog doing this? So obviously there's some anxiety and fear there, and what might make a dog afraid of the food bowl? Well, it could be the process of eating. If that hurts, that might make him cautious and cause an approach avoidance type behavior. If it's near something like a air vent, there's a strange noise, there's a change in the air conditioning system where it whistles or creaks or something. That might make a pet nervous. In some cases, I'll have dogs that you switch over to a metal bowl and they see a reflection, and that makes a dog nervous. I've had dogs where they come up and they have new tags on, and the tags hit the side of a metal bowl, and that clanks, and if the dog's really sensitive, that might bother it. So if you can figure out what caused that, then you address that, obviously. Now, you might think through this and still might not have an idea what caused the pet to have a problem. What I would do is I would change the feeding area and change the food bowl. And I would go to a different feeding station, maybe another room of the house, maybe across the room wherever you're feeding. And I would feed it off of something flat. So you might have a food tray that you put dishes of food on, or you might use a plate, something flat, but something real simple. Or if the dog is some kind of object issue, maybe even feed it on newspaper or a plastic bag or something like that. And I would change that. Now, if that works for you, if you feed it out of a tray or just kind of off the paper on a floor or something like that, then I might go to the plate. And if that plate works real well, I might go to a plastic bowl with low sides, you know, some human plastic bowl of some sort, or maybe from a take home from food, you have the little styrofoam containers. That might be something that you could use, and gradually switch back to a regular bowl if that's what you want to do, and then gradually switch back to the original feeding area. The other thing I would do is I would shred up some cooked chicken, and I would mix that in with his, if it's just dry food, I mix it in there to attract him to the food and kind of prime the pump and getting going there. You can always phase that out later on.
Okay. Yeah, right. That's a good suggestion.
Yeah, from what I mentioned, do you have any idea why he might be afraid of the feeding area?
No, other than he's just become very nervous
in
all
general.
The time.
Yeah. And does he get along well?
He's got that herding instinct.
Yeah.
So when I'm in the kitchen, he kind of wants to, you know, well, first of all, I have fed him. I do feed him from my hand a lot. And so he wants that. But just in general, he's just nervous.
And is this a more recent issue, or has he always been nervous like that? More recent.
Well,
okay.
He's always been,
it's worse.
More nervous, but it's way, way worse now.
Okay. Well, I would recommend a physical exam and some lab work, just general health profile from your veterinarian. Make sure there's no underlying problems. I check out thyroid levels in the dog. And and then if that's clean, then the other thing I would do just for general anxiety would be to dramatically increase the amount of exercise he gets. And I would purchase some of these toys that you – let's say scary. There are these toys that you can put food in. The dog pushes them around and treats come out. There are toys that you can put a little bit of Cheese Whiz in, like a Kong toy where the dog licks and licks to get food out of those. So I provide a lot of physical stimulation and mental stimulation and see if that helps him through the anxiety.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Again, we're taking questions this morning about your pet's behavior. Dr. Wayne Hunhausen is in the house with the Westwood Animal Hospital. You can tweet us your questions at KCUR up to date. Jerry from Lone Jack, good morning.
Good morning. I just sort of a silly question here. I was wondering, I know it's supposedly bad for dogs, but I was wondering if garlic powder mixed into their dog food would be detrimental to the animal.
Garlic, small amounts of garlic powder won't be detrimental to a dog. Garlic's used as used for palatability in some dog foods, actually. If the dog eats a lot of raw garlic or raw onions, that can cause an toxic effect on the blood cells and can be real serious. But
does garlic repel fleas?
No.
It doesn't.
No.
Does it prevent any type of scratching or biting on themselves?
No, unfortunately, it doesn't have any kind of antihistaminic effect or anti-allergy effect that would be beneficial for the pet.
Huh. Okay. Well, thank you very, very much.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome, Jerry. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Debbie emailed us this at uptodate@kcur.org. Wayne, our dog, a schnoodle, has an ear infection. The vet recommended Baytril drops and Gentazol cream and Apoquel pills. He doesn't seem to be in pain. The bacteria seems to be gone, but he still shakes his head quite a bit. Any suggestions?
One possibility would be an allergy. And when dogs have allergies, typically inhalant allergies like pollen allergies, instead of having upper respiratory signs like runny nose and itchy eyes like we do, they tend to have itchy skin. Mm. And most commonly, we see these dogs seasonally come in with saliva stains on their paws. They lick their paws a lot. Some of them are itchy in the armpit areas, or some of them are itchy all over. But there are a select group of dogs that come in each year that they're shaking their head and pawing at the ears, and you look in there, and the ears are just a little pink, but there's no sign of bacterial infection or yeast infection or anything, and these guys are just having allergic, itchy ears.
Mm.
So if I would have the veterinarian recheck the ears just to make sure that's under control, the infection's gone. If the infection's gone, the ears look clean, and the ears still bother the dog, then the next most likely thing would be an allergy, and your veterinarian might want to prescribe an antihistamine, or if it's real serious, maybe a low dose of prednisone or something along that line to control that itching.
You know, we've had an awful lot of water for once, you know, this summer, so unlike our neck of the woods compared to the last few years. Has that created more issues with allergies or not? Am I reaching too far?
Oh, I think we're seeing a few more allergies than we've seen in the past, and just if the plants are thriving, theoretically they're putting out more pollens,
yeah,
and that's
yeah.
going to be a problem.
816-235-2888 is how to reach Dr. Wayne Hunthausen of the Westwood Animal Hospital. Let's go back to some calls and go to Dennis from Kansas City, Missouri. Dennis, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a quick question about age. I just recently got a coonhound from Wayside Waves, and their paperwork said he was 2 years old, and we looked at the paperwork when we got home and found that a month earlier he had been transferred from Arkansas, where they said he was 1 year old, and since we've had him, he's grown 6 inches. What can you say about that? I'll take your answer on the air.
I would
run
say,
for the hills, Dennis.
I will like give you a third opinion then.
Yeah.
Actually, bone growth for a dog that size stops around 9 months of age. And small breeds like Chihuahuas, their bone growth stops at 6 months of age. Giant breeds like St. Bernard's, their bone growth stops at 18 months of age.
Mm-hmm.
And so once that stops, the dog doesn't gain any more height. So if he's actually gained 6 inches in height since you've had him, then that would suggest that dog was probably 6 months of age or so. So I'm not sure where all the discrepancy is coming from. But after the bone growth, unless the dog is just an oddity, after the bone growth stops, which should be around 9 or 10 months of age in that breed of dog, it shouldn't grow any taller. It'll put on muscle mass but not get any taller.
Well, speaking of oddities, you sure get some questions in here, don't you? They come out of all kinds of left field, right field, center field, the whole thing here.
Aren't they great?
They're great. I just get a big kick out of all these when you come in here, Wayne. Let's go back to some calls. And Tony from Kansas City, Missouri. Tony, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, I got about a 9-month-old Jack Russell Terrier that he's real, when he plays with my kids, he's all constantly biting them a lot. There's something that I could do to hurt, you know, the biting so much?
There are a number of things. First of all, do your best to provide for the pet's needs. With a Jack Russell Terrier, that can always be a challenge.
Yeah.
But I would some of the first things I would try would give it as much exercise as possible. Maybe even enlist a dog walker if you're too busy. I consider taking it to daycare several times during the week. So really try to burn off all that extra energy. The other thing that I would do would be try to distract it with these toys that we talked about earlier. You can buy kibble nibblers and some of the Kong toys that you can put treats in, and the dog rolls them around and treats come out, or you can give them a Kong toy with cheese or peanut butter or dog food to lick out. So, and those are especially helpful if, let's say, in the evening and the kids are home and they're really active, and because they're moving around, he's real attracted to interact with them and then jump up and bite and things like that. I would do is provide something to keep him busy. And it's okay. Just like you had one of your kids were bothering an older child in the family, you might give them a video game or a doll or something like that to play with. So that'll help out a lot. You don't want to use any physical punishment. Thumping the dog or rolling it on its back or things like that will bruise the bond, maybe even lead to aggressive behavior. Keeping a leash or a drag line on the pet can be real helpful. So either a 6-foot leash or 6 feet of braided nylon rope with a little leash hook that you can buy at the hardware store, inexpensive, not going to get chewed up real easily. And the dog that we raised here recently, a stray dog, was really a mouthy, play-biting dog. Every time you made a move, he was jumping up and trying to bite you in the ankles or the thigh, just trying to engage you in play. And so there was a period where I had a drag line on him when I was home supervising for several months in a row. And that way, if he got started, it was really easy to grab the lead and pull him off rather than try to grab him, and then he's wiggling around and biting at your hands and things like that. That'll help out somewhat too. Keeping toys available all the time, like maybe some stuffed toys if they're safe for the dog, where if he looks like he's going to engage the kids, you can say his name and throw a toy across the room that hopefully he'll run over there and grab. That can be helpful, especially if he knows how to play fetch. That would be a bonus there.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Tony. You know, speaking of punishment, you have some interesting pieces on the Westwood Animal website, Wayne, and you talk at one point about cats and punishment. Now we were just talking about dogs and punishment, but now we're talking about cats and punishment and how that almost always doesn't work with cats. Why are cats so different from dogs in that regard? You don't want to be a physical punisher of a cat.
Yeah. Well, for dogs and cats, I recommend against any kind of physical punishment. I think one thing to keep in mind is a hand should be a friend. And if it's not, if you're rough with a hand and grabbing a collar and shaking it or swatting it or things like that, the pet will become afraid of the hand and then might bite when somebody reaches for it. With dogs, in most cases, though, you can yell at a dog and get by with it. A dog jumps and on you or gets in the trash, you can go, stop it, really loud and make a point. And dogs tend to make up more quickly and recover. Cats, if you yell at a cat several times for like maybe being on a counter, you'll find that the next time you walk in the room, the cat will look at you and then run away. It'll start showing avoidance behaviors. The main difference in the two species lies in their origins. And cats have evolved from more solitary animals. And if you look at a pack of or a group of feral cats, if there's some social problems, you'll notice that they settle up by avoidance because they take care – they hunt small game animals and they just – the cats that are having problems, they just go into different areas and live perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. Our dogs have evolved from wolves. And so they have more – sort of sophisticated, more various ways of settling social encounters because it's necessary.
I knew dogs are more sophisticated. I knew it. Yeah.
They have they have different tools because it's important to maintain the cohesiveness of the pack because wolves bring down large animals and they really depend on each other for hunting and care of the young and things like that. And so if you want to, I tend to use with both species positive reinforcement as much as possible, but sometimes you have to have a pet stop a behavior like scratching the couch or something like that. And so if you need to interrupt that behavior, you want to do it without letting the cat know you're there, if possible. And that's why people often use water guns. And so the cat scratches the couch, you squirt him to make him go away, but you don't yell, make my day or anything like that. Yeah. You just interrupt it with something that doesn't involve you doing some social interaction.
We're talking about dogs and cats and their unusual behaviors and how to deal with them. Dr. Wayne Hunhausen is our guest. We have this tweet at KCUR up to date. Jill writes us this about her rescue puppy, Wayne. I have a puppy 11 months old. We have had her for about 8 months. We adopted her from a shelter. She's very shy and timid. They didn't know her history, suspected that she was dumped or from a hoarding situation. How do we help her overcome her fear of absolutely everything?
Patience is the first key. And people that in a situation like this, they've brought the dog in, they want you want do everything they can to make this dog more comfortable. Oftentimes they get pushed into social situations more quickly than they should. And so there are just really two considerations in working with a dog that's shy or afraid of things. One is protection and avoidance. Don't allow, let's just talk about the social issues here, don't allow anybody to do anything to or around that the pet that makes it hesitant or anxious or show some avoidance.
You don't want to be aggressive towards this animal.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not talking about aggressive, but socially assertive.
Mm-hmm.
And so the things that we typically do to try to befriend a pet would be to come up to a dog like this and lean over it and extend a hand to either pet or sniff or whatever and look at the dog and say, oh, I love dogs. You know, I want to be your friend. I'm good. But when the dog looks at you, it picks up different signals. And being big and standing over the dog is threatening. Have a hand come out, even if it's a friendly gesture that allows the dog to sniff, you penetrate its personal space.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it more nervous, and especially the eye contact. And that direct eye contact from somebody the dog doesn't know or trust yet makes it more worried about what that person is going to do. And so the dog needs to be around people as much as possible. But what I would do, ideal situation would be have somebody come over to the house and sit on the floor while the dog's somewhere else in the home and give them a little bowl of meat pieces, cooked chicken or turkey or something like that. And then later on, open the door and let the dog come in. And the person on the floor should floor or a low lying seat or something.
Ignore the dog.
Completely ignore. They should just be a little lump in the corner or on the chair or whatever.
And flip out.
No,
a piece.
You got it. I'm going to turn it over to you.
And we need to do that sometime. But flip out a piece.
But just flip the food out and then gradually flip it closer and closer. If the dog gets up close enough where you can hand feed it, that's great. If it stops 3 feet away, then don't coax it or anything else. But just you can end it there. But the dog's had a positive event. Food. Meat fell out of the sky when it was in a room with a visitor. The visitor didn't do anything to make it uncomfortable. And you do that over and over again until it gradually gets a little bit closer.
Patience being the key here.
Another thing I would do on walks with the social issues here is take along treats. And as you walk along in quiet areas, every time the dog sees somebody at a distance, like maybe 50 to 100 feet, as soon as it sees somebody, have it sit for a piece of meat. But never let it get close enough where it's comfortable. So over and over and on a walk or maybe 50 feet from a walking trail, the dog can see people over and over again.
Sure.
And every time it does, you give it a piece of steak or chicken or something. So you kind of plant in the mind the idea that you can't explain that people are good. Good things happen when people are around.
We're talking about dog and cat behavior with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. Let's go back to some calls here. And Adrian from Independence with a question about her 19-year-old cat. Adrian, good morning.
Hi, my cat just turned 19. And one thing we've noticed.
What kind of party do you have for a 19-year-old cat, Adrian?
Actually, his birthday was on 4th of July, so he can't hear anymore, so there was all kinds of fireworks. He used to be scared of fireworks, and now he's outside, doesn't he? Remotely, I have no idea what's going on. But he's doing really well. In the past year, his claws have a tendency to stay out, which he can get caught on carpet. He's eating well, gets in the litter box. He quit grooming, and we were brushing him, and he did not like that. And we noticed in an area on his upper thighs, it got matted underneath. And now some of those pieces of hair where we kind of clipped and cut are, like, coming off in sections.
Mm.
And it's leaving exposed skin. So this happened to us last week when our occasional pet sitter called, and we're like, oh, my gosh. And so this just recently happened. So I don't know. There's another area that still has that area where he won't let us brush. I don't know. Will his fur grow back, or is this just something as he's aging that we just have to really watch? We just don't know. I don't know anybody with a cat that old, like their behavior patterns. You know, he sleeps a lot, but he's also, you know, eating, hydrating, and not doing anything. You know, he's just kind of the old man of the house. And
right, sure. Dr. Hunhausen here.
Yeah, I can't, without looking at the pet, maybe doing some tests, I can't tell you for sure why that hair's falling out like that. It may be age-related. They just have some agenesis of hair follicles, and they're not producing hair like they should. When a older pet stops grooming, I'm often concerned about some kind of general underlying illness. So if he hasn't had a physical exam and some lab work and a thyroid test, that would be something to consider. Otherwise, taking the pet to a good groomer or maybe a veterinary hospital with somebody that's knowledgeable, they can maybe help you trim some of those mats away. Whether the hair will grow back again, it really depends on what the underlying problem is. And if it's just an age-related problem, maybe it's not going to get better. But I can't answer that. I'm sorry.
Stephanie from Leawood is calling in. Stephanie, forgive me. I'm going to read your question because we're very short of time here, but this is an interesting one. She has a six-year-old rescue dog that goes nuts over UPS and FedEx trucks and has cornered one of the drivers at one point. Goes nuts in the house when he hears the trucks coming. What do you do?
Well, I don't know if I can end it in a few seconds. First of all, don't let the dog get away with it. Every time it does that behavior, it gets worse. And so confining the pet away from those stimuli, keep it in the back room during delivery times or closing windows drapes where the cat, a dog can't see those areas, see those people coming by, that can be helpful. And then one possibility would be to put a pet on a leash, maybe with a gentle leader, take some treats, find a UPS delivery area, and be far enough away where the pet can recognize the truck, but also far enough away where it's not really, really roused, and then have it sit for a treat every time somebody comes in and out of the building or in and out of the truck. I mean, that's really bare bones. There are other things that need to be done, but...
Well, Stephanie, good luck with that. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all our calls. Leslie, Lucy, and Malcolm, sorry we can't reach your calls. Lots of emails here, too, we couldn't get to. You're going to have to come back more often because people want to talk to Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. Thanks so much for your time today, Wayne.
Yeah, have a great day.